Now, yesterday I was talking mostly about samadhi. Samadhi is a nice place to rest. Like the people, you know, we do love our sleep in the evening or in the night or sometimes in the afternoon. We like our afternoon sleep to rest the body. And once we get up from sleep, we are refreshed, and then we start continue our work, or we do whatever in the world, we do whatever we like. So it's very similar in the life of practice. Now once we learned how to practice, to put our mind to rest, to stop the mind engine from running, and then when we come out and we are refreshed, then we actually do start with our investigation. Investigation is the only thing, or in other words, or in other terms, more complying with the wisdom, developing understanding, is the only way to how to get rid of the kilesas. But we should not forget that before we are able to use wisdom, we should have the ability to concentrate on the object to be investigated. This is important. There are several methods in the beginning, there are several methods that we can use for investigation. The first topic of investigation, there are actually, until the stage of anagami, there are actually only two topics of investigation. The first topic is the body. As I explained yesterday, the body is the main object, is the main obstacle. It occupies three of the lower fetters. There are five lower fetters. So the obstacle of the body is comprised in the feather of greed and hate, and it's comprised in it's included in the fetter of the body and self. I and the body are one and the same thing. This is the identification with the body, and that is the third fetter. The first fetter is the fetter of doubt. Doubt in the sense that there is no hell, there is no heaven, there is no karma, there are no results of karma, and there is no nibbana. Doubt about this. The second fetter is the fetter of fiddling with our rules and precepts. Constantly taking them and then leaving them out of sight and then taking them again. When we have our precept, and for lay people there are five precepts, and for the monks there are 220 precepts, the moment we take it, that's it. We're not saying the next day, I would like to do this, I know it's against the rules or it's against the precepts, so for today I don't observe the precepts. This is exactly what it's meant with fiddling with rules and precepts. If we take the precepts, then we take them. Take them to the rest of our life, and if we don't finish in this life, then before we die, we take on the precepts to continue in the next life. The precepts are our protection. Don't forget that the Lord Buddha gave them for our protection not to fall down into the lower realms. Who wants to fall down in the lower realms? I don't think anybody. The lower realms are the animal realm, is the ghost realms, is the demon realm, and are the hell realms. I don't think anybody is really apt on doing that. But when you look at mankind, you see them rushing along on the highway or rushing along on the autobahn, driving fast and fast and fast. Not caring where the autobahn or where the highway leads, because the highway leads us to hell. Most of them are predestined to go to hell. They don't care, they just look for what they want. And that's the problem. They just look for what they want, they just look for what is amusing, what is nice, what is fun, and that's what they're after. They don't even make a second thought, what are the results of this? Or if their actions are within the five precepts. They're just running away they are running along the stream, and they don't care where the stream ends. The Lord Buddha and we are Westerners, Jesus also said, the masses are going through the wide open door that leads to destruction. Only few are going the stony path that leads to the heaven. That is Jesus' teaching. The Lord Buddha made it a little bit more clear when the Venerable Ananda asked him how many people are going to heaven and how many people are going to hell, then he told him, do you see that bull over there? How many horns does he have? The horns stay for the people who go to heaven, and the hairs on the fell, and the hairs on the fur stay for the people who go to hell. So, and Tanachan Mahapua sometimes uses it to teach his lay people who come to see him. Are you the horns or are you the hairs on the fur? Think about very carefully what you're doing. Too many are going down. Only few are going up. And if you think how many hairs there are on the fur, it's millions. And in comparison to the two who really go up. So don't look for people, you know what they are doing, and if you can do the same thing, just do whatever is within the precepts. If you lay people, whatever is within the five precepts, at least this keeps you on the human realm. At least this gives you the right of rebirth as a human being. Understand this. Take this serious. If you're in doubt, if some of your actions or some of your words are within the five precepts, then just better don't say. We have, you know, the people who come here, have enough mindfulness, have enough awareness, and being able to take the opportunity to ask themselves, what am I doing right now? And if this is within the precept, just don't do it because other people are doing it. This is not the way. The other people are going to hell. Where we are going, this is our own choice. And if you've seen it, if you understand what I'm trying to hint at, the way of practice is the way against the stream, against the mainstream. It's not within the mainstream. The mainstream just has one way, down, down, down. And the stony path is the path of practice. People will laugh, you know, especially, you know, now. Now they're in the world, you know, and they sit in their comfortable car and racing along the highway. And they will laugh about the people, you know, who walk in the barefooted in the sun and taking the slow path up the hill. But in the end, who is going to laugh? The people who took up that stony path. Because they will become, or they will be reborn in a better place, or at least they will be reborn in the same place. In German there's a saying, you know, wer zuletzt lacht, lacht am besten. That means, you know, who laughs last, you know, laughs the best. I don't know if there's a saying or something like that. In So take it serious. And if you see it, it's actually, if you're interested in going the path to Sotapanna, or going the path to Nibbana, then it's a prerequisite as well. So you do yourself a favor. Just keep the precepts. That rules out the second fetter. And if you just admit there is heaven and there is hell. And if you believe that every action, every word that we say, and every thought that we have will have an effect in the future, and that what we are reaping right now is the effect of our old actions, of our old thoughts, and of our old words or speech, then you rule out this first, the second fetter and the first fetter. So, then there's only the third fetter to go. But the third fetter deals with the body. The body and I are one and the same thing. That is so to say, in worldly terms, that the car and the driver are one and the same thing. They are not different from each other. Every one of us knows, without the driver, the car would not do anything. It wouldn't fight. We know it. But if the driver gets into the car, puts in the key, turns around the ignition, then the car starts running. And then if it pulls the wheel to the left, then the car will turn to the left. If it pulls to the right, then the car will turn to the right. If it puts down the accelerator, then the car will accelerate. And if it puts on the brake, then the car will stop. So the driver and the car, understand this, are two different things. And so is it with the body and I. The citta and the body are two different things. This thing you have to break. If you keep the first two, if you keep the precepts, and if you give some trust, or if you give your trust that there are other things that we cannot see, and there are other things that we cannot hear, that there is heaven and there is hell, and there is karma. Don't doubt that there is karma. Whatever we say will have an effect. Whatever you do will have an effect. And whatever you think will have an effect. Just don't doubt that. And don't doubt that there is Nibbana. Otherwise, you know, it will bear our way. So then the main problem for entering the stream will be the association from the citta with the body. The moment we look in the mirror, we think, today I look good, or today I don't look good, today I look a little bit depressed, so I might have to make some makeup, or something like that. Or I have to get more sleep. We identify immediately with this image that we see. When we see a photo of the past, then we immediately think, this is me. So what are these things? Let us consider it very carefully. If the citta doesn't move, the body doesn't move. When the citta is completely quiet, for instance, if it's in samadhi, the body doesn't fudge. It doesn't move. You can stay in samadhi for 7 days without the body moving. So, because the citta is absolutely quiet, nothing moves. So now, when we look at our body, what moves? You know, constantly it moves. This, there is some pain, or this is, you know, then we want to, there's an itch, you know, we pull out our hands here, and we do this all unaware. We are not aware of these things. We are not aware of our movements, of the little movements. We are not aware of what is going on. We are not aware that the restlessness of the citta is producing the restlessness of the body. We might sometimes see the restlessness of the body and think, oh, well, where is this restlessness coming from? There must be some cause. There must be some bodily cause. We never think that there must be some problems with the citta. Get the citta quiet and the body will immediately get quiet as well. Get the citta one-pointed and the body won't fudge. You understand? You get that clearly. The body cannot move without the intention of the citta. Because the body itself doesn't know anything about the body, but the chitta knows everything about the body. It has learned it for 15 years. It has learned it for 15 years to get the body moving, to get the body talking, to get the body thinking. Huh? We trained 15 years, the first 15 years of our lives. The first thing we learned was to digest food. Then the second thing we learned to learn to walk. How much pain was this? We got up, fell over. We hit our head, we cried, and then we started over again. Until 1 or 2 years, we could walk. So, the next phase was learning to speak. How much pain was involved in that? You know, who was training in this body? Not the parents. Or, think about it. Or did the body train itself? Or wasn't it you who wanted to get up and walk and see the world outside? The wanting deep inside, that we want to walk, that we want to talk, that we want to hear, and that we want to think, made us able to get this body working in a proper manner. And then the thinking, it took long years until we trained our speech, to refine our speech and to refine our thoughts until we were 15 or 16, until we could fully use it. And then trained it even further more for higher education, to refine it even more. So, once we are 20 or 21, then we are fully apt of this body. So 21 years it took us to get this body going in the way that we want it now. Now, after another 20 years, it's going to break down. With about 45, it's going to break down. And then with 60, the memory is going to lose, and this is going to lose, our eyesight is going to lose, and our ears, our hearing is going to go down. So for just 20 years, we train the body for 20 years to be able to use it for 20 years. For the full maximum amount of time. And then it slowly starts to rot away under our own feet. Like we say, you know, when the car is getting old, you know, it rots away under our own butt. For what? And then when we get old, when the body is breaking down and we cannot do the way that we used to be able to do, then we think about the new body. About the next life, about the next body. Forgetting all. And you see how easy it is to forget all these things that we experienced in our youth? How easy is it? We forget it. That the next life we have to do the same thing. Imagine this. Imagine it now. Just being born again, you know, learning to shit, learning to digest. Learning to walk again. Just imagine it for a moment. Is that what you want? For another 15 or 20 years, you're to being able to use it. And the body is only at its height for 20 years or 25 years. And then it's starting to break down. If you notice, you know, how it breaks down, and if you suddenly walk down the steps, you know, when one of your knees is not working anymore, then instead of walking down the steps, you fall down the steps. And then you notice you're getting old. Or you're getting more sensitive to the weather. So when we're getting old, we're looking for the next body. Forgetting, you know, how difficult it was to train this body. And who is training this body? It's a citta. So, we have to separate this out. We have to clearly see this. We have to find an exercise that shows us the citta and the body is not the same. The Lord Buddha gave us an exercise. The exercise was pulling the wagon in its bits and pieces. Once the wagon is in its bits and pieces, where is the wagon? The wagon just disappears. There are only nuts, bolts and planks and whatever. Sticks. But where is the wagon? When you see just a heap of material, you don't see the wagon. And that's the same thing. You can do the same thing with the body. Once you put the body to its bits and pieces, where's the body? And who is the one who knows about this heap? So how can you be something, you know, that doesn't exist? If you pull it into its bits and pieces, lay it out in front of you. Lay it out in front of you. First put the foot there. Then put the second foot there, then put the lower leg, then put the upper leg. You know, just put it. You can put it nice and neatly, or you can put it, you know, just crumple it on a heap. And then look at that. Look at that to understand. And once you put one part of the body out there, and then look at it with your inner eyes, then it's out there, it's not there anymore. You have to understand this. This exercise you have to do until you understand it. That the body and the eye are different things. Two different things. Because once the body is out all there, the identification with the body drops for a second. And that's what we want. That's what we are after. The identification with the body drops. Just for a second. The moment you touch one of these body parts and put it back together into place, you know, then the identification suddenly comes on again. But as long as everything is out there, the identification drops. So we have to do this exercise until we understand the body and I are two different things, or the body and the citta are two different things. Get to understand it. This is an exercise. We have to do it not only once or twice. You might have to do it 100 times. Just see it clearly. See it until, you know, the eye really disappears for the moment. Just for a second. That's all what we need to know. The citta will realize it, or the heart will realize it. It has disappeared. But still there's something else. Get it clearly. Understand it clearly that the citta and the body are just like the driver in the car. When the driver gets out of the car, you know, he has more freedom than in the car. He can walk anywhere he wants. But as long as he's in the car, you know, he just can take the roads. So as long as the citta is confined in this prison of the body, you know, we just can do what the body can do. But the citta itself can do everything it wants. It can go into this realm or that realm, you know, visit this or, you know, fly or you. It's not confined anymore. But why do we love to confine it? Why do we love to put it in this prison? Why do we think this body is such a great thing? Have you ever looked at this body in a very close way? Have you ever looked at it in a very close manner? Have you ever seen, you know, that whatever gets in touch with this body becomes dirty and filthy? For instance, our clothes. We put on nice cloth, you know, after 2 days we can't bear the smell of it. So we have to wash it. So where is this dirt coming from? Or where is the stink coming from? If you just would put the cloth on the on the line outside, you know, it wouldn't take this ghastly smell. Huh? So where is the smell coming from? Just think about it. All the food, the nice food that you stuff in, the moment it's down the throat, you don't even want to see it anymore. And especially you don't want to put it in the mouth again. Once it's filthy with the spittle, we don't want to eat it anymore. Even if it was the most delicious food, it's not appetizing enough. So whatever comes in touch with the body gets filthy. Did you ever consider this? Did you ever think about this? So where is this filth coming from? You put only nice things. Nice shirts and nice soap or nice perfume or nice food in the body. And whatever comes out is just stinking shit. Smelly, stinking shit. The nice food turns into shit. And the things that come out, we don't want to see. We flush them down the toilet. We don't want to see them and we don't want to smell. The cloth, you know, that got in touch with the body or the pillows, we just wash. We wash the smell off. We never really put it down and say, where is this ghastly smell coming? Or where is this shit coming from? What is inside that turns everything into shit? It's like, you know, if you build in this world, if you build a factory, where we just put the most beautiful things into this factory. And what comes out is just shit. Do you think anybody in this world would support a factory like this? But we do support it. We stay with it. We stick with it. We fight for it. For this factory. Why? And gives us so much troubles. Remember, when was the last time the body didn't give you trouble? The older you get, the more difficult is it to remember. But even when we are young, you know, the body gives us trouble. It gets sick here and then. It gets ache or it gets stomach problems or this or that. It constantly gives us trouble, this body. Think about it. Just like the car, you know, we constantly have to put it in a garage. This is not working or that isn't working. And it takes a lot of our resources, you know, to keep up the car running. And it takes a lot of our resources, our energy to keep this body running, isn't it? When we are in lay life, you know, we have to work 8 hours a day. To house the body, to feed the body, and to clothe the body, and to give it medicine. So 7 or 8 hours of our life, you know, just wasted for this body. And the rest of it, you know, we just waste our time. Looking for this and looking for that. Looking what we think is fun. Look at the things a little bit more closer. What you're doing, is it really fun? The people in the West, you know, they come to the Asian countries and they think, you know, it's a lot of fun to lie on the beach, you know. To lie on the beach, to heat the body up until, you know, one cannot bear the pain anymore. And then jump down in the cold water. And that's what they call the atmosphere. And nobody even questions this. And it's similar with orgasm. We heat the senses of our sexual desires up with the sights and the sounds until we can't bear it anymore. And that's what we call the utmost pleasure that we can find in the human realm. So we have to produce pain. So it's the same thing. Well, we can just put or hit our head against a brick wall. And the moment the pain goes, we feel so relieved. This is what we're constantly doing. Hitting our head against the brick wall. And once the pain goes or release, then we feel satisfied. Then we think, oh, that was fun. I have to hit my head again. Or once we come back from the cold water, we bath in the sun until we are so hot that we can't stand it anymore. I've done it myself, I know. But I've never thought about it, so that's why I give you these thoughts. I've never thought about the pleasures in this way until I got a better understanding. It's a relief of pain, you know, that is actually lust. It's like you put your hand in the fire, you know, and have a cold bucket of water beside you. And then the moment, you know, before it really burns, you know, put it. And then you think, this is the kind of fun that we have in this world. Everything, every kind of fun is based on the same idea. We have to heat ourselves up. Like we get an object of lust or we get an object of greed, and once we get this object, then we are relieved. And then we think we are satisfied. And that's what's happening. And once we are satisfied, we're looking for the next object of lust or the next object of greed. Or for other people who don't find it, you know, so funny and being lusty, they find the object of hate. It's one of the same thing. Greed and hate are not very different. They're the same mechanism. You know, in the end, when you go beyond greed and when you look at greed and hate, you see it's one and the same thing. It doesn't matter who eats you up. If it's the werewolf of greed or if it's the tiger of hate, they eat you up alive. They really eat you up alive. And the people, you know, either being in hate or being in lust, you know, they say, oh, that's wonderful, oh, that's wonderful. Think about it. Think about it, take a step out and see the things from a different point of angle. Take a different point of view and look at the things from a different point of view, and they must become obvious. Now, they must become obvious when we look just at the things that we do, everything that we do for the body. Our whole life we are doing this for the body. We're working for the body, we're educating the body, we're living for this body. In the end, all our effort was in vain. Because the body is going to die. However much care we took about the body, it has to die. So that's why we're here, take as little care as necessary to maintain this body. And if you see it, if you experience it for yourself, it's really very little time during the day. We eat once a day, and we wash once a day. And the cloth, you know, for the monks or for the ordained people, you know, we just have 3 or 4 pieces of cloth. You wash it all in one day. All your belongings you have, you can wash it in one day. Not only one day, 1 hour is enough. 1 or 1.5 hours. That's the littlest time we take to maintain this body. And the rest of the time we have free time. We really have free time. To look into our heart, to understand the true nature of our heart, to understand the true nature of greed and hate, to understand the true nature of the body, because that's where the greed and hate are rooted, the body. And when you think about the body, that whatever comes into the body and whatever goes out of the body, and when you start investigating the body, looking inside the body, then you see. It's just a factory that turns everything into something that we don't like. It's not because the nature of the body is disgusting. No, because our views of these things are disgusting. That's why we're getting disgusted. When we look at the inside, interior of the things, we get disgusted. When you see an arm torn off in a car accident, and when you look at the Thai newspapers, you see it nearly daily on the a torn off head or a torn off body part, they love to show it. When the blood flows up, they love to show it, take a picture and show it in the newspaper. And we get disgusted. We get immediately disgusted, or we get immediately some sort of repulsiveness is coming up. And that shows that we don't like this idea. We don't like this idea because it conflicts with our view that we have about this body. That this body is something nice and beautiful and admonishable. Oh? No, not
Nice and beautiful.
No. Well, I forgot the word. I just had it, but it was slipping my tongue. So it's something that we really love. It's an idol. This one. Yeah, a door. So we have this view that this is something very adorable, this body. We take up with all this pain, we take up with all this shit. Why? Now we have to get one step deeper. Because of the sixth sense. The senses of hearing, the senses of sight, the senses of taste, the senses of touch, and the sense of thinking. Did you leave out one? Hearing, smelling. The sense of smell. That's why. Because we think they give us something. And especially in the West, the sense of thought is prolonged. Very much prolonged. Some people just can live on the sense of thought and forget all about the other senses. They live in their golden ivory tower, like we call it, or ivory tower. Never come back to it. They just live to the rest of the end in their thoughts and imagination. They have lost all reality with the world. But the rest of us, you know, we're still conflicting with the senses of smell and hearing and seeing and tasting and touching. So that's it. So get down to it. That's it, what we want. But the senses are rooted in this body. And the senses are of anicca anatta dukkha. They're impermanent. They don't give us any lasting satisfaction. When we taste this, you know, if one taste of a nice food would be enough, you know, then we never need to taste it again. But why do we have to taste it over and over and over again? Or music that we like, why do we have to hear it over and over and over again? If it would have a lasting effect on us. Now we have to hear it again. A thought that we like, we have to think it over and over again. It doesn't last. We have to reproduce it, until we get sick of it. Then we see it, you know, we constantly have to reproduce it to stay. The smell, we have to constantly reproduce. And touching, we constantly have to reproduce everything. Get down to the facts, you know. Get to the facts and see. And then start. And that is already investigation. That is already the first part of investigation. Getting to see it in line with the nature. That things arise and cease. And that we are always running like after this soap bubble. The moment we got the soap bubble bursts. You know, the children love this. But we are big children. We love it. We cannot get enough of it. We just see another soap bubble with the color we haven't seen, you know, we run after. And that is just a thought, you know. You call it a thought, or you call it a memory, or a new idea, or this or that. Look at your life, you know. How often have you changed your ideas? What you have thought 15 years ago, if the thought would be really yours, why, how can it change? You change your thoughts, you change your views, you change your opinions. You even change your tastes, your senses of taste. Everything has changed. The body has changed, memory has changed, thought has changed, they're constantly changing. Get to know these things. Just look, you know, just step out. Like the driver, just step out from the car, you know, and have a good look at the car, you know, open the hood and see. It's not all shiny. It's not a shining engine. It's pretty dirty, oily, and... Well, look under your hood. Tear off the skin and see what is inside. You like that? Next time you go into the mirror, then if you think, you know, you like the image you see in the mirror, tear off the skin, you know, and you get disgusted. And that disgust shows us only that we have a wrong notion of the body. It's not that the thing under the skin is itself disgusting. No. It's not disgusting itself. It's our views and opinions we have that are either good or bad. They are heaven or hell. They are lovely or dislovely. We like them or we dislike them. So we have to. And that is the next stage. Once we understood, once we clearly understood that the citta and the body are two different things, then we have to go close. Then we go to start really with the body investigation and turning it upside down. And that has only the effect, and however you produce this effect, pulling up the things that we do not like. If it's not the body, if you love the interiors of the body, you know, there are still a lot of other things that you don't like. So pull them up. So we have to learn to do asupa. Asupa is seeing the ugly things in this world. And don't even imagine that there are no ugly things. As long as there are lovely things, there are ugly things. It only turns at the stage of anagami that there is no ugliness and there is no lovingness. So there are no beautiful things and there are no ugly things. Before that we all have. But our balance of these things are way out of balance. The scale of lovely things and the scale of ugly things are way out of balance. So we have to balance the scale. And that's why we have to do asupa. That's why we have to do at the ugly things, at the things that we don't like. That includes, of course, our tendencies of characters that we do not like. If we see our greed that we do not like, or if we see the hate we do not like, you know, pull it up and stay with it. Like with the unpleasant feelings. Learn to stay with it, don't run away. Like with the pleasant feeling, stay with it, don't run away. Don't run away, just stay and learn what they are. We want to understand the true nature of these things. And we want to understand, you know, who fooled us, you know, in believing that this thing is beautiful and that thing is ugly. If you go to a different country or if you go to a different continent, people think very differently. What we think in our society is beautiful, in another society it's called ugly and disgusting. So it cannot be the thing itself that is ugly or disgusting. It's our view and it's our opinion about the thing that is ugly or disgusting, or that makes it ugly and disgusting. And sometimes it makes it so repulsive that we have to throw up. Not because of the thing itself. Understand this. Get to understand it. Get to understand it clearly. And that's what we have to do. We have to bring up. In the next step of the path of practice, we have to bring up all this ugliness until we actually cannot see any more beauty. Whatever we see, we turn around and see its ugliness. Or loathsomeness. or whatever you call it. And then once we do that, once we can't see any more beautiful thing, then we train ourselves to see the beautiful thing again. And then the main play is going to start. Then we destroy the ugly things with the beautiful things. Or the pleasant feeling with the unpleasant feeling, and the unpleasant feeling with the pleasant feeling. That's a play. Our citta is at that time, it's so up, in immediately bringing up an unpleasant feeling, or immediately bringing up a pleasant feeling. So it can destroy one thing by the other, one by the opposite. So the pleasant feeling is destroyed by the opposite of the unpleasant. And the unpleasant feeling is destroyed by its opposite of the pleasant. But we have to train it. We cannot train it now, right now, because we don't have the skills yet. We have to learn the skills by first bringing up the ugly things. All our life we were running for the beautiful things, for the pleasant things, and now we have to run and look actually at the unpleasant. Until we can do this play. Until this play gets very fast that within the in a lightning second we can change. And then, once our mind or once our citta is so up in producing these images that produce this pleasant feelings or the unpleasant feelings. Once it's so fast, once it's so up, then we actually can place both of these images within our mind, keeping them both without destroying. And then we just walk through the center. And that is the end of greed and hate. Just walk through the center, seeing both things as they really are, both side by side. And then we just walk through the center, and that's the end. And that's the end of our body investigation. And then we start with the Namakanda, with the mental feelings, with Sanya and Sankara, Sanya and Sankara, that makes up all this delusion, and Vijnana, to get to the end of the stage, to get to the end or to get to Nibbana. So, and I think Nibbana is a good point to close the talk, so I will close it here.